Apparently, we're on the air. So welcome, everyone. This is On .NET, a weekly chat with the .NET team and guests. And today, our guest is Miguel de Icaza. Does Miguel need introductions? I don't know. You wanna tell people who you are?
Yeah, I am Miguel de Icaza, and I run engineering for Xamarin.
Hold on.
Company that does .NET for mobile.
Hold on. There has to be technical problems, and apparently I have.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah,
I had the window open at the same time, which is the last thing you want to do.
Oh,
okay. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Start again. This is On .NET, a weekly chat with the .NET team and guests, and we have Miguel de Icaza today.
Thank you for having me, Bertrand, in this inaugural session of On.NET.
Yeah, very first.
Yeah, so what are we going to chat about today?
We're going to talk about you.
Oh, okay, all right. well, I have two kids.
That's what I'm talking about. We also have Rich, who is here today.
Okay.
Say hi.
Oh, where's Richard? Oh! How's it going?
Hey, Miguel, how are you?
Yesterday. Hey, Bertrand, I cannot see you. You have a big banner on top of your face. Yes, that's better.
Yeah, so I'm Rich. I'm a PM on the .NET team. I work with Bertrand.
He's my boss.
Yeah. I'm also good friends with Miguel. We work together. He was actually emailing me last night. Together we try and make the .NET ecosystem great. Right, Miguel?
That's right. In fact, we're just talking about the .NET 4.6.1.
It's reference source.
Right. Yep. We've merged it into Mono. We haven't released it yet, but it's been merged.
Okay, right. So I emailed you about that last night. So you were just waiting for this this video thing to give me the answer.
No, I'm pretty sure. Did I respond? Did I not respond? Oh,
I don't think so.
And this is how it's done.
Yeah.
Really? Did I not do that? Oh, I'm a terrible person.
Right. So maybe to give, not that we actually intended to talk about this topic, but to give people a bit more context on what we're talking about. We have .NET Core, which is our open source .NET runtime on GitHub. I think people know that. We have .NET Framework as well, which is the .NET implementation that has shipped within Windows for many years. And we've had this reference source for quite a few years. You can see it at referencesource.microsoft.com. It had a license that meant Miguel and his team couldn't use it. And so Miguel came to us and said, you know, there's some code in here that I think would be very useful for Mono. And so we have a GitHub repo, which is github.com/Microsoft/reference source. And it has an MIT license, which makes Miguel happy. So him and his team can use it. And so each release, 4.6, 4.6.1, we do a new push, basically a code bomb, but in this case, I think a code bomb is fine. A new push of the updates. And Miguel's always asking me like, oh, when is 4.6.1 gonna be available? And so this time it came fairly quickly, and Miguel was happy. So I was asking him if that code was useful to him, and I think the answer was yes.
Yes, it is. It is always useful to us because Mono is still, we still track the product, the desktop API. So we're still not. We haven't moved yet to the new and the new and glorious world of .NET Core. So when that happens, we'll also use that. But for now, we're still on the kind of the old world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've ripped out about, it's hard to tell, you know, percentage-wise, but I would say probably 30% of Mono code is now just reference source. So it's, you know, they're converging. They're no longer, we no longer have our implementation. We've thrown away a lot of the code that we had. And it's basically just .NET code now.
Right. And we're going to continue on this plan, right?
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah.
And we love to delete code.
Yeah, everyone likes to delete code.
Yeah, ideally, you want somebody else to maintain your code.
Yeah, totally. Awesome.
Yeah, so yeah, let me tell you, we've been experimenting recently with, you know, now that Roslyn is out and Roslyn is all the rage, we've been experimenting with ways of reducing memory usage. And we think we came up with something pretty clever in a runtime. The mono runtime, there's a branch, can't remember the name of the branch, but we now run our strings in mono now can either be UTF-16, so they use 16 bits per character, or 8 bits, technically 7. And we can get into the details later if you guys want. But it means that at creation time, our strings can be, you know, use less memory, use less, more memory. And the trade-off is everywhere where you treat or you handle strings, you have to check if you're dealing with a fat string or a slim, a fit string.
Right. So then does that, I'm hearing then that the process in its, so there's a string class, yes, and a string keyword in C sharp. Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing that the process isn't one way or the other. There isn't like some process mode, which is UTF-8 mode or a UTF-16 mode for what that string represents, but it's on an instance by instance basis.
Correct.
And depending on how that, yeah, how is the string created in the UTF-8 case? Maybe that's the interesting question.
I want to be clear. It's not UTF-8. It's a 7-bit ASCII. And there's, you know, there's a couple of nuances there. There's a little bit of a nuance there. But essentially, when you create the load string or you create the string for the first time, since strings are, for the purpose of the author, immutable, when we create the string, we scan the string that is coming from C sharp, and we determine whether this is going to need this full 16 bits or it can live within 7 bits. And the reason why we leave it at 7 bits is because it means that whenever we have to call out, we can always bitlit the thing. So when we're calling out to Unix that likes to use UTF-8, if we know that all the strings are limited to 7 bits, we know that we can blit it without further processing, right? If it was UTF-8, we would need to do a little bit more work.
That makes sense. We've also been looking at the UTF-8. Well, we were looking at, yeah, UTF-8, UTF-16, as opposed to this particular pivot. We don't actually have a plan per se on that yet, but as we get a little bit further in that discussion, that's definitely something I'd like to share with both you and the community to get some feedback. I mean, at the end of the day, it would be nice if we had similar kind of stories for string compression, if you will.
Well, my feeling is that you guys are down the correct path. And which is a discussion that we had, and let me fill in the audience on this, which is the introduction of UTF-8 as a UTF-8 string as the core of the implement, or you know, as a first class type, right? And the idea is, I think the idea is the world runs on UTF-8, the web is UTF-8, so there's really no point in converting strings back and forth and wasting time. So I think that for the future of .NET and C#, that having a UTF-8 type is the right thing to do, and provide all the proper processing of UTF strings that goes with it. This what for us it was just a man. This Roslyn is amazing, but Xamarin Studio. When you load Xamarin Studio in Xamarin Studio, that puppy takes I think it's like 400 megabytes. And a lot of those are strings, so we wanted to save some of that memory.
Right. So what I hear you saying is the particular approach you took is a step on the journey as opposed to the final stop.
Yeah, I mean it's a more immediate thing that can be done right away. But my personal desire is to go full UTF-8 in .NET. That's what I would like to see, so that we can handle this new brave world of people using Unicode characters that go above the 16 bits, right? Most .NET people, you know, they get the features for free, but when you go beyond the 16 bits, there's a little bit of complication, a little bit of more thinking that needs to go into this. So ideally we'll be, if we go full UTF-8 processing, then we would put the proper primitives for everybody to deal with this properly. So I think, so I'm supportive of everything that you guys do in that area. This was just Band-Aid. How can I make my our IDE not pause so long?
Right. So that's kind of maybe up-leveling the conversation a little bit, because I'm not sure that everyone in the audience cares about this particular case. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your Roslyn usage and what your you kind of see your use of Roslyn being kind of over the fullness of time. Also, you have your, is it MCS or MSC?
MCS.
Compiler, how that's going to fit in?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. Our IDE has for many years used NRefactory, which is a library that was originally developed as part of Sharp Develop, an open source IDE. We took pieces of it and created MonoDevelop, and that's what we use as Xamarin Studio, right? Xamarin Studio is just MonoDevelop with a little bit of branding on top of it. And it was good for a long time, but it was never as good as Visual Studio was. So when Microsoft open sourced Roslyn, I mean, this was amazing. First, because Roslyn is a very well-designed, very well-architected compiler as a service that has every possible feature you can imagine. And for people building IDEs, Roslyn is really it's really a gift from Santa. It's a Santa gift. So we actually said a year ago, I told the team, all right, let's replace NRefactory with Roslyn. And it took, and I said, this is a quick hack. I mean, we should have a proof of concept in a couple of weeks. And Mike was going, no, it's not going to be a couple of weeks, maybe a lot longer. No, Mike, it's a quick hack. Just put it in, put it in. Just take that thing out and put the new thing in. It took us about a year. So it was about a year to fully replace NRefactory, the type system, absolutely everything. And we finally merged all of our Roslyn support into MonoDevelop Master. So we're now fully switched to Roslyn. Everything is now powered by Roslyn. We use the existing Visual Studio refactoring essentials. We can run them there. We have great code completion. I mean, it's amazing. Everything that you can expect from Roslyn. And hopefully we'll enable Analyzer soon. So that's one part of the piece. Getting a Xamarin Studio to replace everything with Roslyn. And we merged that a week ago or something like that. So it will be in our next release. Now, for our compiler is a lot faster than Roslyn today because we're a batch compiler. We're not a compiler as a service. But there is no way, now that Microsoft has developed Roslyn and they can move incredibly fast, and the team is moving incredibly fast, for MCS to get all the nice, great features that are going to come in C# 7, or you know the incremental approach, right? There's discussion about incremental or full language support. So what we're doing right now is we're getting ready to essentially make Roslyn our default compiler in Mono. So when you get Mono, Roslyn will be the default compiler. So we're working on it. It's just a couple of bits and pieces need to be put in place, but that's what we're doing. So it's a Roslyn world from now on.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I want to interrupt just 1 second to say two things. First, we have 49 people watching the live stream, which is amazing.
For our first one.
Yeah, for our first one. I mean.
Yeah.
That's great. And the second thing is that I can't figure out for the life of me how to enable comments on the YouTube stream, which is a bummer because this is how I thought we would get questions. So what we'll do instead is that people can just tweet any questions they have, include me, BLEROY in your tweet, and we'll take questions. All right, let's carry on.
Right. So we haven't disabled comments intentionally.
No, it's just incompetence, yeah. Not malice, which okay. is often the case with us, right?
Yeah.
Well, with me.
I also tried to put a little label like Bertrand has that it's very nice, and I couldn't. I've clicked everything. I swear to God, I've clicked everything that you can click, and I cannot put the little things there.
That's too bad.
Next time, we'll have to have you again on the show.
So here's a question on the Roslyn thing, Miguel, yeah. which is super glad to hear that, you know, Roslyn is useful for you and that you've integrated it.
The chat works. The comments are not enabled, but the chat works.
Oh, the chat works.
Where's the chat?
People can ask questions on the chat. Great.
Where is the chat? Oh, there it is. Oh, there.
I don't see any actual questions
yet. Not yet.
But long term with Roslyn, mm-hmm. So right now Roslyn is running on two different VMs, mm-hmm. runtimes, Mono and Core CLR, actually, and .NET Framework as well, Big CLR. How do you see Mono support kind of progressing for Roslyn over the fullness of time? Do you see that as something that the Roslyn team is, like, I don't know if you've had conversations with them, Roslyn team is treating as a first-class citizen, and they're like blocking CI and those kinds of things for Mono tests that break? Is that something that you kind of see the Mono project driving? What does that look like?
Well, we're historically used to, we have to fix our mess, and so we've been fixing our mess, and Roslyn surfaced a few little things in Mono. I don't think it was that it surfaced too much stuff, but I know, for example, that the REPL required us to finish some parts of Reflection Emit that we never implemented, but those things are now implemented. So I think we're going to be fixing those ourselves. I don't think we need the Roslyn team to do that for us. We'll be doing that ourselves.
I was meaning more like, obviously there's changes hitting the repo mm-hmm. on a daily basis, like any project.
Yeah.
And so when those changes come in and they're merged into the code base, what kind of guarantee do we have that those changes are going to work on Mono and we didn't kind of just lose Mono support with Roslyn with that particular commit?
Yeah. Oh, well, we don't have anything set up in place, but as soon as we put Roslyn in Mono, we'll make sure that is in place. And we have CI for Xamarin Studio. We don't have CI for the Roslyn that goes into Mono, but that should be coming in soon.
Right, but do you see actually having tests run as part of the Roslyn team's CI? Because that would be obviously quite upstream.
Yeah, I would like to, but I mean, here's the question. If they're developing their master branch and they hit a bug in Mono master, right, that we fix it, right, or, you know, Mono stable, do they have to upgrade their Mono to the latest, or should they work around that? From where I'm standing, the way that it's going to work is, at least for Mono, is we have these discrete releases over time, and on each discrete release, we would make sure that the test suite completely passes. So that I don't want to bog down the Roslyn team unless it's critical. But so I think at these discrete points, we would pick a release, an official release. We would make whatever changes are necessary to work in case there's workarounds necessary and ship that version. Otherwise, we would just ship the vanilla version of Roslyn.
Okay,
and
so you kind of
want to ship vanilla.
Right, so you kind of see yourself as mostly being downstream of the Roslyn project.
Yes, yes. And if we need something, we'll contribute at some point.
Okay. I'm just using this opportunity. The team had asked me to talk to you about this. So.
We should. All right. I think that there's a couple of ins and outs that need to be sorted out. If they surface a bug in Mono, I mean, we fix it. How do they? Are they willing to upgrade their Mono to latest, or they want to stick on a stable version?
I think it comes down to two things. Mm-hmm. One is we want the Roslyn project to be super efficient for everyone involved. And the other one is we want to make Miguel and the Xamarin business happy.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. And extremely, yeah, so I think that's what
you're saying. Let's figure out what that looks like. I don't claim to have a plan there, but let's work on that together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
We have a first question from Eric. Will Mono be reduced to be just support for the exotic platforms within 5 years? With the progress MS is doing, when is Mono irrelevant?
Well, 5 years is a very long timeline. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You know, we were just chatting about this a second ago. Everybody wants to get out of the business of maintaining code. So that also goes for us. So if we can get out of the business of maintaining code, that would be ideal. in 5 years, a lot of things can happen. I don't know what that means. It's possible that you don't need more in 5 years, that we're all core CLR based or core RT based. I mean, it's very likely. There's a possibility that maybe there's pieces of Mono that are unique for certain scenarios that you need to keep around or don't really blend easily into the core CLR. So it's difficult to talk about the 5 year window. But my goal is still the less code we have to maintain, the better. So we've already picked a lot of pieces from core CLR into Mono. We have exploratory efforts to bring the GC. And that turned out to be trickier than we thought and a little bit challenging in Android. But yeah, I mean, on the long term, I would like to get out of the business of maintaining these things and have a unified code base. And I mean, that's long term, that's what should happen. But it's the same thing with you guys, right? I mean, long term, a lot of things can happen, but you still have .NET Desktop and core CLR, and we can't just abandon the user. So so it's a tricky question. I would like to merge as closely as possible with core CLR where possible and core FX. So sharing the burden of maintenance as much as humanly possible. And we're making great progress in that area. We're making great progress in that area. But it's hard to tell. I mean, and at the end of the day, I don't think it's such a big deal. You know, for many years, Microsoft maintained versions that were very specifically crafted for watches or specifically crafted for, you know, for 64K machines. I mean, not 64K, but what is this thing called? The Spot Watch, and then the other version for Compact Framework. So there are scenarios that will drive a certain piece of the code. So we'll see where that goes.
And then what's important is that there is a version of .NET that runs cross-platform and that is high performance and so on, right?
Right. And the other thing is, I mean, at least from the class library standpoint, they should be close enough and they should be converging into something that is pretty much the same. So it really doesn't matter.
Okay. I had a question about that indie game deal that you're offering. What percentage of Xamarin users are actually working on games?
Oh God, I don't know. I don't even know. I don't even know the statistics of our users using anything. I should know this stuff. We probably have surveys. I don't.
Well, do you think it's an important scenario? Maybe we could start there.
Well, yes. In fact, I was just working a few minutes ago in we're doing a binding. We're integrating C# into Autodesk's new game engine. What is it called? Stingray. So my last few commits, I was just rushing a commit before I joined here about getting a couple of latest APIs in there. So no, I think it's very important. Unity makes C# popular in the gaming world. I think that C#, if anything, they popularize it. And
right, they proved the use case.
Yeah, and I think it was a great use case because C# is much higher level than C++. You know, it's if you make a mistake, doesn't crash your game, doesn't corrupt your application in these bizarre ways that are so easy for C++ developers to do. So it's a high level language, but retains a lot of the characteristics of C++ performance wise, especially when you compare it with with the popular languages that game developers use, things like Lua or Python or JavaScript, which are incredibly slow. So in that spectrum of things, C# did quite well. And code completion is a delight to use. Things like await and generated state machines are a delight to use. So Unity popularized it, and now, you know, we want to help as many people that want to use C# with their game engines to use it.
So you're actually offering Xamarin to indie game developers.
That's right. Yeah, we also have this promotion currently about giving free Xamarin to all indie game developers.
Nice.
I know from talking to the Unity folks, who you know as well, they're pretty strong believers in .NET and C# as their platform. They believe that they made the right choice, and I know they get a lot of positive comments from their customers.
I mean, people like it. At the beginning, they also supported a strongly typed JavaScript, but I think the world has moved completely over. I mean, at this point, it's everybody just likes C# very much, and it's very interesting to see the forums of all these game engines saying, when are we going to get our C# support, right?
Right. When we first started talking to Unity, they did talk about JavaScript and Boo.
Yeah.
That's no longer part of the conversation. You know, when we talked to Lucas and Jonathan and Ralph over there.
Yeah, I think that the tooling really makes C# shine in this space. And the more libraries that you have to deal with, the more that strongly typing languages help you. So I think that has been partly responsible for that.
Okay, let's probably move on to a different topic.
We have some other questions on the chat. So May, I hope I'm pronouncing this kind of right. I apologize otherwise. How can I remote debug a web app that works on a Raspberry Pi? So I guess that's more a question for us.
We don't support Raspberry Pi yet.
And if I change from Mono to CLR Core, how can I debug remote on Linux?
So how about we start by Miguel explaining how that scenario works on Mono?
So debugging. So the way that the debugger works in Mono is the runtime, essentially, when you launch your application in debug mode, will step in and control your application and do things to it. It's not like a low-level debugger. It's a debugger that essentially takes over your app and controls everything that it wants to do. I was going to draw a terrible political comparison there. So, so the good news is that when you launch your application in this special mode, you can ask your application to wait for the debugger to connect to it. I don't remember the command line options, but they're all documented in the Mono man page, where you pass this flag called debugger agent, and then you say, this is how I want you to run. You can either run on server mode, so your application will wait for an IDE to connect to it, or you can have your application connect back to an IDE. And there's an option in Xamarin Studio for you to specify this information. I don't remember what it is. But you know, just drop in by the channel and we'll walk you through it. This is how debugging happens today, even with VS Code on Mac and Linux. When you use VS Code to debug Mono, this is how it works, except instead of giving you a remote address, you just give a local host address. So the debugger is already remote, has always been remote. So it's just a matter of configuring your IDE to launch remotely and connect remotely to it. Really not much to do there.
Right. So then on the second part of the question, we don't yet have a story for CoreCLR on Raspberry Pi. Mm-hmm. Right now for CoreCLR, we only support x64 as a chip. Raspberry Pi is ARM 32. We definitely aspire to having ARM 32, hopefully sometime next year, 2016. There are actually some work. Bent Pai, if that's how you pronounce his last name, has been doing work on ARM32. And when that is a bit further along, you'll be able to run Core CLR on the Raspberry Pi, which would be awesome. I don't know the exact debugging story, although I do know that we have been integrating with both GDB and LLDB. And so I guess this is probably where there's a slight difference in approach mm-hmm. with our debugging approaches. So we typically try and build a debugging story that's very much like the native debugging story for a platform. And that's what we've done on Windows. Like, you can actually debug managed code with WinDBG on Windows. And so that, you know, GDB and LLDB would be similar. So it would be whatever the remote debugging story is for those native debuggers.
Interesting. I didn't know you guys did that.
Yeah, well, it's in process. I believe we have some documents on our on the Core CLR repo that actually talk about this. Mm-hmm. So it's all public. I'd be happy to talk to you offline, Miguel, about what the general plan is for debugging. If that'd be interesting.
Yeah, and I'll tell you where we came. We had a different painful story coming the other way. But it was, you know, a disaster of our own making.
Right.
So we set up, anyways, it's a long story. I'll tell it to you some other day.
Yeah.
Robert is asking, I still track merge changes from MCS into PlayScript, which is ActionScript for .NET and Mono. Is there a timeline or roadmap for the MCS retirement? So you talk a little bit.
Well, we don't have to retire it, but I don't think we have the manpower or the interest to bring all the innovations that are happening in Roslyn to MCS. There are just so many things being added to Roslyn at this point. I mean, C# 7 or whatever the Delta is going to be is going to be a fabulous. It's going to be a fabulous drop. So we don't want to be redoing that work. So I don't have a timeline, but I don't know that we have a timeline for C# 7 yet either.
Right. I mean, another way of saying that, Miguel, would be if PlayScript is happy with C# 6 as for its implementation, then party on with MCS for potentially quite some time.
Yeah.
If for some reason, PlayScript requires or really aspires to use some C# 7 features, then that's where the conversation becomes more interesting.
Yeah, I think that what happened with PlayScript is it's essentially they took C# and they took our C# compiler and they sort of changed the skin a little bit, like changing the CSS. It's kind of like changing the CSS of a page, and they made it they made it parse ActionScript. So so PlayScript is really C# with an ActionScript flavor. So that's, I think, what's happening, that that the author of the comment is essentially keeping up with our compiler and adjusting it so that their ActionScript compiler still has all these features. So what it means is that PlayScript, at least the last time I talked to those guys, was essentially a superset of ActionScript. It was ActionScript, but had things like await or things like generics that don't exist on ActionScript. So it's an interesting project. It's an interesting project. But you know, you could also migrate to Roslyn at some point, do the same thing that you did, but in Roslyn. It's going to be a little bit harder, but it's doable.
Interesting. City is asking, when is the official Xamarin TVOS come out?
Oh, that is very interesting. Well, we've been doing previews of TVOS, but we'll have the official version sometime in January.
Can you explain what TVOS is for the part of the audience that doesn't know?
Absolutely. TVOS is, you know, like everything Apple does, it's magical. It's it's the operating system that powers Apple TV, and in particular, the new Apple TV, not the old one. So now developers can target the TV, and we've been shipping an SDK for it for a while. The only reason why it's not official right now is that we were at the end of our release process when the TV came out, and we didn't have designer support. So the real issue is we didn't have designer support at the time. So we had to backport a lot of code to make the designer work on the old code base, or we could just say, listen, you'll just get it on the next code base. So if you get the previews, they're essentially, I mean, they're very close to what is going to become official in January. So you can use it. And I think the team is trying to get a release out this week of tvOS.
Great. Very nice. Victor is asking, what is the future for F-sharp in Xamarin? And I think you're a fan of F-sharp of sorts, right?
I'm a fan of F-sharp, yes. And in fact, I'm a big believer that Microsoft should promote more F-sharp. You know, you guys have it, and it's a jewel that you guys have on your chest, and it deserves to be shown to the world more often.
It has a very active community, and I'm trying to showcase F-sharp as much as possible on the weekly newsletter.
So. Yeah, it's I like it because I write less code when I write F-sharp. So, you know, all of my documentation tooling that I build for my own use, it's all F-sharp now. It's very comfortable to use. I really like it. So what is the feature? I mean, we just released a major update to our F-sharp tooling. We had a lot of bugs. We had the bare minimum support until the November release. And our November release really packed about 7 months worth of fixes. So we got that thing in. But roughly around the same time that we were wrapping the November release up, Jason Immison joined us. Jason is one of the authors of he's a .NETista, a .NET lover for many years. He worked on this tool called, what is that thing? The thing that does code completion for VS Code.
OmniSharp, right?
OmniSharp, yes. So he worked on OmniSharp for a while, and now he works in our F-sharp team, essentially improving F-sharp support. And it's been very interesting to watch the transformation of Jason, because he said, listen, I want to learn more about F-sharp. I'm not a professional F-sharp guy, but I want to work on improving F-sharp support in Xamarin. And I said, all right, you're in. And what is fascinating is that now he's become a complete convert. He's an F-sharp guy left and right, doesn't want to write C-sharp anymore. the work of Jason will you'll start seeing his work appear in January or February.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, Don Syme knows how to create passionate developers.
Right. So Jason's drunk from the F sharp chalice.
Yes, he has. Exactly.
John is asking, any plans on open sourcing Objective Sharpie?
Objective Sharpie. So
again, you might want to explain what this is.
Yeah, so Objective Sharpie, it's a tool that, it's many different tools, but we wrap them all in a single thing. It's a tool that we use to easily bind Objective-C and C++ APIs and surface those to C#. No, we do not have current plans to do it. Maybe we will. No current plans right now.
Now I have a question. What is your general approach to deciding what you want to open source and what you want to keep closed?
That is a very good question. First, we have a legacy, a cultural legacy, and we've decided that within that cultural legacy framework, everything is open source. We typically keep proprietary tooling that is relevant to the Android and iOS platforms. That's part of it. The other part is, some of the stuff that we do just out of convenience or expedience happens to be hosted or integrated with a bunch of third-party technology or controls or things like that. So sometimes it's closed source out of sloppiness or slowness, and sometimes it's closed source out of an actual decision. To give you an example, somebody just emailed me and said, hey, I really need the source code for these controls. Can you give it to us? And we looked into it, and it's, you know, there's tentacles going to that thing in every possible direction to get it to build, right? So I said, listen, here's this thing under MIT X11 license. If you manage to compile it, it's yours. And I'll ask the team to figure out how to extricate it out of our infrastructure. So, so you know, if you want this code for all these controls, I can give it to you. It's a pain to build. But that's roughly where we end up in there. It's if it's relevant to Android and iOS, they're typically proprietary. Our Visual Studio integration is proprietary, and the rest is open source. So.
I find it interesting what you said about disentangling the building of a component before you can make it open source, because that actually reflects a lot of the experience that at Microsoft we have in open sourcing code that was actually built with internal tools and making them build by somebody who doesn't have access to those tools is definitely a challenge. So.
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, we would open source everything. It's just, we're not there yet. So maybe as the business evolves, and our customers evolve, we'll be able to open source more things. But right now, we think that the value in Objective Sharpie and what it gives us is significant. That it keeps the business growing and the business happy.
Yep. Well, we'd be the last one to throw stones on that.
No, but I mean, I think that it's a genuine question from the community, and that is the explanation.
Yeah. Okay. Next question.
So I don't know how this is. INS83LV. When Bitcoin?
I think it's what is really. Oh, I know it is when. Sorry.
What?
No, never mind. It's when.
When will Bitcode app thinning technology be supported by Xamarin?
Okay, that has multiple layers of answers. App thinning is already supported. The guy that is asking the question is confusing a couple of things. So let me take a step back. Apple has introduced for their platforms a mechanism that allows applications to ship smaller downloads to people on the phone, right? So when you're on the road, you don't have to download 500 megabytes of junk. You only get 80 megabytes of junk, right? And you can unload. Sometimes some of the stuff is irrelevant because you have a 64-bit phone. You don't need the 32-bit stuff. You have a high-end GPU, so you don't need the poor textures. And you definitely don't need the data for the game that you're not gonna hit for the next 10 hours. So app thinning is actually a collection of technologies. The majority of app thinning you already get today. So that means when you upload an application that has 32 and 64 bit binaries, your customers only get one of those. You don't even have to say anything. This will just happen. Bitcode is really not part of the equation there. The second component are assets. So we already give you the ability of tagging your own assets with platform-specific flags. So you can say, this image only downloaded on this kind of GPUs, or these assets only go into if you have so much memory. So that's already supported. And the majority of your assets, Apple, if you follow the conventions for Apple, hold on, let me say no to this. So the majority of your assets will already be app thinned. So Bitcode really doesn't come into the equation. In fact, Bitcode doesn't really do much in terms of app thinning today. So a separate question is, when is BitGo support coming? And this matters mostly to the watch people. And I'm thinking maybe March, April, around that time frame. But it's completely independent of app thinning.
Okay.
Okay, that's it from a question standpoint.
No, actually, we just got a new one.
Just got one.
Robert has another question. Any Xamarin Studio, i.e. OSX, upcoming support for github.com/.NET/codeformatter? Currently, I have build tasks to SSH to Windows, run the formatters, and return the changes. Yuck.
Okay.
Code formatter, build users with automatic red source to follow your coding styles. Oh, well, this is great. I had no idea this existed.
Yeah, so do you want to know why that's there, Miguel?
I think that is to settle the debate.
Yeah, so when we open source stuff, we run the code formatter tool on it, and it just prevents a whole bunch of PRs around, yeah, the PRs and the debates.
Yes.
So
I'm okay.
Yeah, Jared Parsons, who I think you know, he wrote that tool. So naturally, it's a tool on top of Roslyn. The funny part was, you know, we were so religious in this. So, you know, we did CoreFX, we ran the code formatter, blah, blah, blah. And then someone came to the realization that we hadn't run the code formatter on the code formatter code base.
Oh, all right.
So someone brought a PR, which is running it on itself. So
that is pretty nice. Well, I mean, it's no secret that I have diverging opinions with the .NET ecosystem about proper code formatting. But, you know, I'll suck it up when we have to use CoreFX.
Yeah, although I think the question was more about
supporting it in Xamarin Studio.
Yeah, about this as a feature.
I think so. I mean, until now, I didn't know this even existed. I'm glad it exists. We'll look into it now. You know, there's always you can always send us a pull request, and we'll take it. So it's open source. If you're in a rush, you can always send us that. But I think it's a good idea. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the first step would be. It seems like there's no reason why you should have to run code formatter on Windows, right?
Why is that?
Well, that's what the question says. It says currently I have build tasks to SSH to Windows.
Oh yeah, that's right. Why do you do this on Windows?
We should be able to get past that step. I assume they're running on OS X or OS X, sorry.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Yeah, I mean the world is now cross-platform.
Yeah, okay.
We should be able to run it just on the Mac, and we should be able to add a command that runs it directly in Xamarin Studio.
Right. So if there's like a mono chat room or mono mailing list or something where Robert can engage on this particular thing?
Yeah, we're on Gitter, just like you guys, on the mono/mono organization or the mono devel mailing list. I don't know that I paste anything on this Q&A session. I couldn't get that to work.
Right. I mean, or Robert could also just go into the Roslyn Gitter as well.
Yeah.
Any one of those things. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, we'll get it there. Okay,
awesome. That works for me.
And I'll add the links to the description of the video when we're done.
I have a question, Rich. Have you guys thought about graphics and 2D graphics? I know that this was a topic was being discussed a few months ago, and I think I have an answer. Solution.
Yeah, so I'll just quickly answer your question before you give yours, which is we looked into it. We had someone do a significant write-up on it. We remain interested in that. We haven't invested any significant engineering time into it, but we think it's a massive hole in .NET Core. And if there was some place for us to end up in the good place, we'd love it.
Yeah, I think I have a solution. We have a prototype, and we'll be happy to open source it. We've surveyed this a billion different ways. As you guys know, we have system drawing. We have two implementations of system drawing. And for reasons that are not worth getting into here, we think that it is much better if we just adopt as a community Google's Skia graphics library. So we have we now have Skia Sharp, which runs on everything that Skia runs. It is brutally fast. And I know that there was a concern about how fast can we generate images on the server. So the good news is, provided you slap a GPU on your server, Skia can generate and use your GPU to generate images on your server as well. So,
right. Can it use CPU?
Yes. CPU and GPU.
Okay. Yeah. So the
it's an add-in.
I can tell you. So that sounds amazing. Yep. I'd love to coordinate with you offline on that. I can tell you the reason why we didn't adopt your system.drawing.
Yeah.
It was because so underneath it was Cairo.
Yep.
And on Windows, it uses GDI.
Yeah.
And GDI was the thing we were trying to get away from.
Oh, I think that Cairo has a software renderer.
Okay.
That doesn't use GDI. It might have, what Cairo has is, Cairo, in addition to its software renderer, has interfaces to the native windowing system so that it can easily fetch images and post images. So that bridge, but it doesn't really use it for rendering. Although I know that there's also a Direct2D backend.
Right. But,
the issue that we had with Cairo is that it keeps an internal state, and you end up translating back and forth from this state way too often. So it turns out that it's an inefficient design, and the Mozilla folks also moved away from Cairo for that reason, because they were it was showing up on their profiles. So Skia is well maintained, very, very active. I mean, brutally active, and they just came up with a C stable API, which is what we would need, because Skia, the problem that Skia has had historically is it's a C++ API with no guarantees of compatibility. And the only two users that were there were the Android team and the Chrome team. And everybody else was left out in the cold. But now they have a C API. We're contributing to that C API to surface everything that we need. And essentially, we're going to end up with a very nice 2D API for .NET.
And how is Skia licensed?
Uber liberally. It's what is it? MIT or Apache or Skia license? I can't remember.
Okay, awesome. Let's make that happen.
Yeah, I'll shoot you an email with the details. The only problem right now is it's a little bit on the chubby side. It's a large library.
your library or the Skia one?
Yeah, Skia is a little bit big. But it's okay. It's okay. We're trying to trim it down a little bit. I don't know
What's the distribution story with it? Like, can you get it via apt-get, for example, or do you distribute it yourself?
No, we have a NuGet. Let me see if I can find that Nuget. Where do we have that? Jenkins?
Right, but you're saying the native code, the Skia, is inside your NuGet.
Oh yeah. It's all inside the Nuget. Yeah.
Right.
We have that components maybe. I need to find it. We have it somewhere.
It's lovely how he pronounces it as if it's French.
Yeah. Nuget. Yeah. Well, you know what? It's pickles and Nugets.
Yeah, so we got the Nuget there. We got the Nuget there, and we want to publish it soon. We were just thinking Android and iOS because that's where we're focused on. But
so Daniel is saying BSD.
Oh, yeah.
License.
Yeah. So here's the problem with that Nuget has. Nuget has a fundamental problem with this new brave world of Unix, which is it is designed to have everything in the same package, right? And Nuget has every binary for every platform. And the challenge is when you're dealing with Unix is you don't really have we need a way of distributing Nugets that are built for example, FreeBSD on x86, Linux on x86-64, or Ubuntu on PowerPC, right? And those variables, and that is just it's very painful to build a Nuget today that includes all these bits. So I think that we need to evolve Nuget to support per-platform Nugets.
Right. Yeah. The problem is that the NuGet packages, like, you know, Newtonsoft.json, for example.
Yeah.
It's a physical artifact as opposed to a conceptual one. There's kind of no aggregation that occurs. Mm-hmm. And it's super problematic if all you want to make is a simple bug fix, right? To just one of the folders. Because the kind of economics of that activity are not aligned.
Right. I think that we need to iterate a little bit on NuGet to fix this because in the Unix world you have things like foo.notarch.rpm, which is the equivalent to a NuGet, right? And then you have foo.x86rpm. But I think that we need to take it a little bit further, and we need to have foo.x86bsd.rpm.
That's what I meant by physical versus conceptual. Like, there's no aggregation that occurs on the name. Because where we are right now is, so in your NuGet package, you say, like, you put the NuGet name, and there's no way to kind of provide another bit of information to say, well, I want this name, but I want to have this flag that says I only care about x86 right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but also, I think we agree.
The package is a pain, right? We have this multi-stage thing where we build in the Mac some bits and build on Windows the other bits, and then we copy the files over before you create the NuGet, right? And ideally, we should be able to create the Mac NuGet on the Mac and the Windows NuGet on the Windows, independent of each other. Anyways, that's a problem with our Skia Sharp library. That right now, it contains a binary, right?
Yeah.
A binary for the .NET universe, which I can't remember what it is. I think we just ship macOS, right? But ideally, you would like to ship for Linux, for Windows, for Mac, for Win32, Win64, and so on.
Agreed. Okay, well, let's talk to the NuGet team about that.
Yeah, we're kind of out of time. We are almost at an hour. We have some more questions from the chat, but I apologize. We won't be able to treat them all. So maybe a good place to ask additional questions is the Gitter for Mono. I want to thank Miguel for being our first guest. That was fantastic. Thank you very, very much. And, you know, people have a lot of questions. So if you want to be on the show again, really anytime, that was an absolute pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure was mine, guys. Thank you for having me on the first, on your debut show. Thank you very
much.
Who
else?
It's also great to see Rich. I don't see him often enough.
Yeah. I'm cool. Smiling more than I used to, though, right?
I know.
No, it's great to talk to you.
Two happy campers, look at you.
Yeah. So you know that last night I ate a Xamarin 4 cake.
Really?
Yeah, you have to look at Twitter.
Oh, let me see. Is it Twitter?
James brought the cake into if you look, it was retweeted on the .NET handle.
No, I see it's on your Twitter. We celebrated Xamarin for Seattle Mobile. Oh, nice. Oh, this is very nice.
Yeah. I ate too much cake.
Oh. Sorry about that.
So I just have one last question, Bertrand allow me. Just something a little bit more personal. Uh-huh. So tell us, like, the best gift you're getting for your children for Christmas.
What is the best one? My love and attention. They picked. They already made their list. It includes they're five and two, and they picked a Batman garage, a treehouse, and some Goldie blocks, something or other. And what's the other thing? I wanted to get the electronic set, but my wife said that's not a toy for them; it's for you. So,
right? No Raspberry Pi Zero or MakerBot 3D printer.
No. My wife saw right through that. she said. I think her exact words were, "You're pulling a Homer Simpson." So,
so she knows you is what I'm taking from this.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, no, it's the kids chose it, and so
very nice.
Valentine's gonna bring pretty, you know, what they wanted.
Awesome.
Well, what they wanted the day that they requested it, which is probably already. What about you, Rich?
Yeah. What are the big things? I actually have no idea, to be honest, what kids are getting for Christmas. I tell you, I'm my wife wanted a pair of John Fluvog boots. They're kind of like a designer boot, so I'm going to get those for her.
Oh, for her. Okay. I thought for the kids. I was like, oh.
No, so I'm kind of unaware of what we're doing for the children, which demonstrates that I'm a bad parent. But
well,
What's that?
It shifts. With the kids, it shifts on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Cool. How about you, Bertrand?
Thank you very much. I think the best one is, so one of my daughters is really into drawing, into manga, and we are getting her a big artist table, and she's getting usage of the guest room to work on her drawings. And
oh,
I
think,
that's legit.
That's pretty nice, I think. So.
The favorite one, she gets a big room?
So the younger one has the biggest room, so it's only it's kind of making things even here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank God I'm not on stage yet. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, that was really a pleasure, and we'd like to have you again if you have time.
Well, I'll see you next week, anyways, or whenever you have your next broadcast.
Cool.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Yeah, thanks. Thanks to everyone for tuning in for this live show, and everyone who will watch it later. This was the first episode of On.NET with the .NET team and Miguel de Icaza. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye bye.
Hey guys.